This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Whatley on KLZ 560.
Good afternoon and welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. It is the Legal Hour with our good friend Kevin Flesh, Flesh and Beck Law. I always tell you when Kevin's on, and I'm going to give you the phone number right now. Put it in your phone. You never know when you may need it, and when you do, you need it right at your fingertips. 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886. You can check out their website at fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H lawfirm.com. And with that, we will welcome Mr. Flesh. How are you, sir?
I am spectacular. Didn't get in any avalanches so far this week.
Man, I was thinking about, think about the disasters of that coming down on I-70.
Yes.
And as far as I know, nobody was significantly injured.
No. Yeah, so the ones last weekend outside of Copper in that 10-mile canyon range. Some cars got partially buried, but didn't have any injuries, which was good. And the ones this week sound tremendous, but it doesn't sound like any injuries mm-hmm. as well. I was telling you before the show, I drove up to Georgetown for a court appearance this week, and I-70 was closed, I think, Tuesday afternoon, most of the afternoon. And it's just, we've just gotten a ton of snow in the high country, and it's heavy, wet snow, and it's starting to come down. So that's good that they are getting it taken care of so that we don't have any injuries.
Right.
Because that's a tremendous amount of energy coming down a mountainside like that.
And skiers, I mean, if they've got out-of-bounds areas, you need to stay inbounds.
Yeah, you do. As a matter of fact, I skied on Sunday, and I was amazed at Copper how much snow there was. And we were in inbounds, but it certainly didn't feel like it with the amount of snow that we were skiing in. And even then, I thought, boy, I hope Ski Patrol had been through to make sure that the area that we were skiing in was safe. But
right.
You still got to be careful in there. Those folks that are out there trying to chase these storms, it's very high today is what the avalanche danger mm-hmm. is, and substantial amounts of snow. And when you get that, we're going to hear about deaths. There's no question, because the powder hounds that follow those storms and follow those things, they've just got to be really careful and be very diligent about what they're doing, checking the snow pits and everything else, because right. it's not something to be messed with.
And, you know, we haven't talked about this much on the show, but skiing comes with responsibilities, and there's a lot of legal things that can happen while you're skiing, right?
There are, and you know, we have a skier, basically an act to make sure that our ski resorts aren't unduly responsible for injuries, because there's lots of injuries relating to skiers. These sorts of things, when we have these big weather events and we have a bunch of snow, you know, running into natural elements within the skiing realm is not something that you can sue the resort over. And certainly, even if there was an avalanche inbounds, as long as the ski resort shows that they were using the normal protocols and doing the normal things necessary to protect everyone, mm-hmm. that's something that you sort of take on as a risk. So you have to be careful of that. Where we do get into issues with regard to liability is those man-made things and other potential skiers or snowboarders that do things to
kind of aggressive skiing,
yeah.
you may call it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, or under the
which
influence.
Is like aggressive driving, right?
That's exactly what it is, yeah. And I mean, if someone causes an injury to you because of their aggressive skiing or boarding, there's certainly claims there against the individual. You generally don't have it against the resort necessarily. But you certainly have claims against the resort when they're doing something wrong with regard to their equipment, and that causes you injury. Mm. We do some of that work. You know, obviously, we see lots of billboards going up I-70 of folks that are doing those sorts of cases on a pretty regular basis. But there's certainly cases out there that are available, but it's not really weather-related generally.
Right.
And people just have to be really mindful of, you know, if you're going to get in the backcountry, make sure you've taken a class and everybody has a beacon and you got a probe and
sure.
you got your shovels and you're ready to unbury someone. Because right now, it's very likely that will happen if you're not careful.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned you were in Georgetown, and we don't touch on this too much either, but you kind of cover the state. I mean,
we do.
And with our show reaches everywhere, so we want everyone to know. I don't care where you are, pretty much.
Yeah,
you can use Kevin.
Absolutely. And in fact, I just finished a case of in all places in Ouray, relating to a wildlife violation out on the Western Slope for a client that had heard us on the radio and knew that we did the Sportsman of Colorado stuff and knew that I was involved in wildlife sort of issues. And so we certainly handle places all over the state. I was in Georgetown this week, but I've got cases in Summit County going on and Eagle County. And then we cover sort of the whole gamut. Talked to somebody that had a matter in Mesa County yesterday, so we can certainly help you. The issue that I always bring up with folks is making sure that they understand that, you know, when you're talking about a front range lawyer going to the Western Slope, there's going to be some additional cost to that, certainly.
Sure.
But, you know, you get some expertise there that maybe you wouldn't, too. I did a trial up in Glenwood Springs about a month ago. So we do travel all over the state, mostly the Front Range, but certainly am willing to go up there and get those things done. And I actually enjoy the little bit smaller communities. It's fun to see folks up there and sort of how they practice law, because sometimes it's different. And you come in as a little bit of an outsider, and there's some advantage to that sometimes, because people don't know who you are.
Right.
The fact that you're effective at what you do.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
Again, it's the Legal Hour, and if you've got any legal question, we'll take your call, 303-477-5600. We're going to start off with something we talked about a couple weeks ago when Kevin was in as well, and that's this red flag bill, and seems to be gaining quite a bit of traction. I think probably it's going to just be a done deal.
And it's exactly what we had talked about 2 weeks ago, and the problems with it, and the Democrats don't seem to care about the due process issues that they're not. I'm amazed at the speed and the fervor in which the Democrats, after they've been elected and they have control of the House, on what they want to do to our state. The red flag bill is a good example of them having an opportunity. We can all have a debate about mental health and weapons and how to control sort of individuals that we are concerned about their safety. But what's in front of the governor, I think it passed both the House and the Senate now. I think it potentially is on the governor's desk for signature. What's there is basically what we do for temporary restraining orders right now, in the sense of due process, that one party can go in and make a request to a judge, and if they have what they term in the legislation as reasonable evidence that there's some danger, that a judge is going to enter an order confiscating your weapons.
All right.
And there's just so much potential abuse in that process, and especially not allowing the person that's being accused to be aware of that hearing and putting them on notice and giving them the opportunity to dispute it at the outset, I think is a real problem.
Mm-hmm. Because the way I believe it looks and what we've read, it says, you know, a family member or someone living with you or law enforcement.
Or so law enforcement.
You and I were talking before the show. I said, hey, Charlie always gets used for examples because he's the only one out of here. You know?
Yep.
So Charlie says, hey, I'm going to try to get at Scott. And he just wants to call into law enforcement. Now law enforcement's involved. So, I mean, he could make some kind of claim like that, get law enforcement involved. And law enforcement then goes to that judge, convinces that judge, they're coming to the house.
Correct. They're coming to the house, and they've got an order now from the court, and they're asking to come into your home and confiscate your weapons. That's exactly right. They're going to serve you with it, and then you have to fight to get those weapons back. You have to fight to get the and listen, I don't disagree with having a conversation about mental health and the fact that folks that we've got a process where we go through to determine whether or not somebody is competent to proceed in court proceedings, or where someone needs to have a guardian appointed relating to the fact that they can't handle their own finances and those sorts of things. And all of those proceedings are, generally speaking, more due process than we're now talking about taking away somebody's guns. And I'm not saying that there isn't a necessity at times to do that. What we're talking about, though, is that this legislation, it does more than that, in the sense of there's a way for due process to occur to make sure that that a person is at least aware of the allegation before they show up at your house. And that's the trouble with this, in the sense that what I see in practicality with regular temporary restraining orders is that if a person comes into a courtroom and seems to be relatively believable and is making allegations that the judge believes may fall into a category of domestic violence or harassment or something like that, almost 95% of the time that judge is going to sign a temporary order for a restraining order to be put in place.
Because the last thing they want is for someone to say, I went to that judge yesterday, they didn't do anything.
Correct.
And now my relative got shot.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Correct. Or something happened.
Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly right. They don't want to see their name in the paper as denying a request for a restraining order. Obviously, we all know that the restraining orders aren't worth the paper that they're written on. A lot of times where someone is just hell-bent on taking care of their business in regards to hurting someone else. I mean, they're not. They're effective in some ways of controlling the individual who's law-abiding. But if the person is not law-abiding, the restraining order isn't going to stop them. And the same can be said probably for this bill as well. And that's what always hurts people in the long run, is the law-abiding citizen follows the law and their rights and their ability to control the situation goes away because the government has taken over that process. My point is with the temporary restraining order, though, is I don't see a judge, the same judge that hears these restraining orders are going to hear these sorts of allegations to take weapons. And I don't see those judges having any different standard. Even though the statute may suggest there's a different standard of review for the judge to decide whether or not you're taking somebody's weapons, I doubt that they're going to change their mind at all, because I think they see it as a pretty low standard relating to the temporary restraining orders, and I think they're going to see it as a fairly low standard to take somebody's guns away as well, because they don't want to see their name in the paper denying a petition and someone getting shot.
Right.
And so the practicality of it is one of the things, just being in the courtrooms enough and seeing the temperament of judges that are in this situation, I don't see many judges being pro-gun enough to stand up to a person that they think is using the statute as more of a weapon than a shield.
Right.
But I could be wrong, but I just don't see that that's happening, because the risk on the judge is exactly that. They don't want to make the wrong decision and someone dies. So they'd rather, it's the old adage with regard to these sorts of things that we see in the criminal context. You'd like 100 innocent or guilty people to go free to make sure that you don't have one innocent person that's in jail. This one is going to be just the opposite. I'd rather see all of these people's weapons taken just so that we can save that one life. And there's the issue, is what cost?
Right.
And I think that's the debate that we're having now in the state. And we certainly see the newly elected folks in the legislature telling us what they think Colorado should be. And I don't know if Colorado would agree.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
And then, you know, the last report I saw, it said 8 Colorado sheriffs say they won't enforce the red flag bill if it becomes law. So then you've got a lot of things wondering, like, you know, what.
So a gun sanctuary
area.
County.
Yeah.
I've heard this as well. I think this is a really interesting issue because for those of us level-minded individuals who think sanctuary cities relating to immigration is just ridiculous, I think the same can be said for these sheriffs. It's like, when do we get to decide to follow the law or not? I mean, and these sheriffs, as much as I like what they're doing, I wonder if that's really the right message to be sending too. And I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to set up that exact argument relating to these two issues, in the sense of sanctuaries, that they're not going to enforce it. So does that mean a judge gives an order and the litigant, whoever it is, has this order that now says, I need to go confiscate these weapons from this individual? You go to the sheriff's office with a valid court order, and the sheriff says, no, we won't serve that for you. You're going to have to go find somebody else to do it. I just don't understand how that's going to work. That's not what our system is based on.
Right.
Our system is based on the rule of law. The arguments and the discussions and the disagreements need to happen now, and not trying to say, well, we'll just won't follow it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand where the sheriffs are coming from, and they did the same thing in 2013,
right,
with the magazine,
right,
but there they filed a lawsuit against the state, and that was litigated in federal court. I hope that same sort of litigation occurs here with a different result, because obviously we still have that magazine ban in place in Colorado, and so that's why these sorts of debates really matters, and that's why people need to get down to the legislature. They need to talk to the individuals that they have elected, or at least the individual, maybe you didn't elect them, but they're in your district, mm-hmm. and tell them why they're not going to get your vote. And you're going to do everything that you can to either get them not elected in the next election or to have them, you know, somehow removed during their term because of this going on.
Right. So it says on here, real quick before I break, it says the petitioner must submit an affidavit signed under oath in penalty of perjury that sets forth facts to support the issuance of a temporary restraining order there for it, and a reasonable basis for believing they exist. And then you get a hearing within four. So they come get your guns.
Yes.
Then within 14 days, you get a hearing.
Where you have to disprove it.
Where you have to disprove it and pay for it. I mean, I've got to hire.
Yep, you got to hire. You're going to want to hire a lawyer because you don't want to go in, especially if the person is saying that you're mentally handicapped somehow, that you have bipolar disorder, or you have something in which you're manic and you're not sleeping and you're, you know, you're a danger to yourself, or you've gone to Porter Hospital on a 72-hour mental health hold within the last month, and you know, there is clear evidence that there is some mental handicap there. You're not going to want to represent yourself mm-hmm. because the court immediately is going to question your credibility. So you're going to have to go hire somebody and explain what's taken place and how you've taken care of those issues so that you can make sure that the judge agrees that there's no danger. And now you're actually you've taken the Second Amendment, your right to bear arms. You've taken that constitutional right, and now you're having, it's not innocent until proven guilty. They've proven enough by a preponderance of the evidence to say that you're guilty of this, that you need to have the state come in and take these things, and now you have to disprove it almost to beyond a reasonable doubt to get your weapons back.
And then if you don't win that, then it says they're trying to determine if the order should be continued, thereby preventing the person from possessing, controlling, purchasing, or receiving a firearm for 364 days.
Yes.
Within a year, we are the guns.
Yes.
Yeah. And
during that process, you have to show that you've rehabilitated yourself enough that you get those guns back. It's not clear from the statute what happens after that 364 days.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think you do nothing and they just hand you the weapons back after the 364 days? I would doubt that that's going to happen.
And also, isn't it like with a restraining order, too, you know, you can't have a gun just with a normal
with the Brady
domestic.
Bill. Yep. Any sort of normally in the
going to help hurt you in hunting licenses. And,
oh yeah,
you can't hunt without a gun.
You can't, right?
So yeah,
and yeah, you can't have and weapons. There's a little bit of a definition relating to it too. You may not be able to use a bow and arrow or other types of weapons under the statute relating to this restraining order. Certainly, the Brady Bill deals with long guns and short and handguns, but that's a federal law. But the state law is even more restrictive.
Sure. If you've got any comments about this, we'll take your calls, 303-477-5600. Kevin Flesch is with us. It is the Legal Hour, Flesch and Beck Law. We'll be right back.
2019 is here, and rates are still in the low fours. Denver's housing market is continuing to increase in value, with over 35,000 more families moving in than out annually. The feds continue to raise short-term rates, like auto loans, credit cards, but many of our clients are paying off their credit cards before rates increase again. Others are doing much-needed home improvements, like new carpet, kitchens, finishing basements, etc. And then some are just putting money away for that rainy day. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Have you heard? There are loans specifically available for those self-employed or those without W-2s. You now have options. Take AIM, 720-895-0500. Your locally owned and trusted mortgage broker since 2001, where we specialize in you, the customer. 720-895-0500. That's 720-895-0500. Affordable Interest Mortgage. And MLS 298191, regulated by DORA, Equal Credit Lender.
You've been told nothing can be done for your peripheral neuropathy. Don't give up hope. Call Dr. Dean Anderson, chiropractor at Front Range Medical Center, to ask about electronic signaling. For the past 9 years, Dr. Anderson has specialized exclusively in the treatment of peripheral neuropathy. Front Range Medical Center can't help everyone, but thanks to an advanced technology called electronic signaling, Dr. Anderson has seen great results for seniors who'd been told there was no hope for them. That's what Dr. Anderson loves most about his job, seeing the hope return to patients who had been suffering with burning, tingling, and numbness. It's worth a phone call. Schedule a $27 consultation with Dr. Anderson, including a neuropathy-specific exam, this week. He will review your health history and past medical records to find out whether electronic signaling could help where other treatments have failed. Don't lose heart. Call now, 720-851-9694, 720-851-9694.
What could you do with an extra $500, $1,000, or even $1,500 per month? How would that change things for you? Would you buy a new car, pay off bills, or just feel a bit more secure about your retirement? What if I told you there's a way to make your dreams a reality? I'm talking about trading and investing in the market. Now, before you say, oh, that's not for me, just hear me out. I want to invite you to a half-day trading course so you can check this out. I promise you, you'll go away smarter than when you came in. We here at Online Trading Academy sponsor this, and we'll even send you home with a free home study video guide. Your money's doing nothing for you in a CD or mutual fund. Learn how to profit when the market's up or down. Call us now while seats are still available at 303-325-2776. Use offer code RADIO50. 303-325-2776. That's 303-325-2776.
David R. Cishan is a certified estate planner, regional vice president of Householder Group, and a registered representative with LPL Financial. David Cishan knows that building a secure financial plan begins with comprehensive strategies in estate planning, income distribution, tax and investment planning, and risk management. Cishan Financial is a family business, and they treat their clients like family. Cishan Financial holds to the highest fiduciary standards, representing their clients' interest above all else. Call now for your free consultation, 720-482-1917, 720-482-1917. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Householder Group Estate and Retirement Specialist, LLC, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. My name is Scott Whatley, along with Kevin Flesh. It is the legal hour, Flesh and Beck Law. 303-806-8886 is the number there. Kevin also does free consultation. And most of the time here on the show, we talk about personal injury things, which we are going to touch on today. But Kevin, let's say if somebody just feels this, the threat of they think someone may be calling on them, and then they take their guns to, we'll use Charlie again, I take all my guns to Charlie's house, and then they come, and I go, I don't have, I mean.
Right. What? So what normally happens, so because we have this right now, when you get a restraining order, one of the conditions of the restraining order, when you get served and you show up for court, it happens in criminal cases, too, with no contact orders, is you have to affirm that you have no weapons. And you have to do it either in front of a judge or by affidavit saying that all of the weapons that you had have been transferred. But, of course, you know, state law transferring now, the transfer of those weapons, legally, you have to go through a dealer and you have to transfer them. And there will be record of that transfer.
Or you're just taking them, dumping them off.
That's not a transfer anymore legally. Yeah, right. That's not a legal transfer. And so that's one of the things with this bill that's going to be interesting, because one of the things I think that they're attempting to do in this legislation is also get their arms around a little bit of, number one, the known individuals who I'm sure there'll be some sort of database that will be created relating to people that have had these allegations against them, much like a restraining order, because mm-hmm. we keep track of all of that sort of data as well. And so not only will you be on some sort of registry relating to that, is my guess, but the weapons that were confiscated or were transferred will also be kept track of. Because right now we don't have any sort of registry for guns in the state of Colorado. I mean, right. Other than when you buy a weapon or when you legally transfer them with a gun dealer, that's the only way that anybody could follow a weapon, mm-hmm. right? And so I think that this process and this legislation is another way for the Democrats to get a sense of what they're dealing with guns in Colorado in general, and then people that they think are concerning.
Right.
And you know, I would much rather have a discussion because I see it all the time in the criminal defense cases that we do, in particular the public defender work that we do in the municipalities, because that's where we see a lot of mental health cases. I would rather have a discussion about how we help people, not in the criminal system, but an alternative system. And some of the municipalities are starting to talk about mental health courts, where we start talking about helping people and figuring out those that, number one, are willing to get help, because there's a lot, there's a big percentage of folks that are sort of in the homeless population that have just sort of checked out of society, and they're comfortable with doing that. I mean, they don't like being homeless. As a matter of fact, I met with a guy a couple, 3 weeks ago up in Longmont, who's been homeless for 9 years, and he's sort of bounces around from town to town, where he can get a little bit of services and where he feels safe, and he's got a community of people that he gets to know. But he's just one of those individuals that's comfortable in that environment. He doesn't really like it when it gets really cold. He doesn't really like it when it's really uncomfortable. But he's willing to take on that sort of uncomfortableness because of the other aspects that he does like in his life. Mm-hmm. He's got some addiction issues. He's got some problems holding a job. But he's always able to sort of make ends meet to the point where he's satisfied with where he's at. Now, that's an individual that you'd like to motivate to try to get back into the system.
Sure.
And you'd like to see other individuals that are similarly situated help with that. And there are some municipalities that are helping them and doing things and trying to get those individuals sort of back into society so they get an apartment, so that they have a stable living situation, so that they recognize that stable employment is of benefit to them. Not just, you know, handing them money and trying to take care of them for today, but really a long-term solution. That's what we need for these mental health cases. And it's not just taking their guns. Obviously, there's a reason that we're talking about the gun issue, because they want to get rid of our guns.
Right.
But if they really wanted to have legislation that would help society, we would be having conversations about, let's have a hearing about the person's mental health and getting some services for them in a situation where they're willing to do it, or if they're not willing to do it, also talk about how can we help them in not a jail, but in a more therapeutic sense, that we can help these people get on some medications or get them in a situation where they start making better decisions for themselves. And that's not the debate that we're having. It's what the problem with this sort of red flag issues is, we're then only talking about guns and we're not talking about the real problem, which is mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we see it all the time. I mean, mental health is a very, very confusing and problematic problem for our society right now. And especially in the healthcare debate, we've still haven't solved anything with regard to that. And that's what the majority of what you see in the criminal justice system, and I think in our society with folks that aren't functioning well, is there's something going on, either addiction or mental health, that they need help with. And we shouldn't demonize them about it. We should be trying to help people.
Yeah.
But we kind of have left our criminal justice system to take care of it, and that isn't necessarily the best place either.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of resources that are used in housing people in jails and not really recognizing that we've got to take a more holistic approach. And it's expensive. That's the problem.
Right. And realize this red flag bill just kind of came about, so we may not have all the details. But let's say somebody wants to file that protection order, so to speak, for this red flag bill. Can they remain anonymous, or do I have the right to find out who did this to me?
Yeah, so the way, there's either the members of the family or the people that are living with you that would have to do it. They
right.
can't be anonymous, but certainly to law enforcement. So I could anonymously let law enforcement know, hey, I'm concerned about this person. Can you do an investigation? Theoretically, law enforcement could do an investigation, find reasonable basis or probable cause to determine that they need to bring the petition, and then they could be the witnesses relating to it. But you would eventually have to have some additional information about why they did the investigation. So I would hope that they would give you'd be able to get that information. But much like DUI sometimes,
right.
the ready reports, you don't always have that information, and it's not really given to anyone unless there's a dispatch tape or something else where someone is given their name and telephone number. So in theory, I mean, you don't want to be sort of a tinfoil hat person where you say, you know, these anonymous people who are out to get you will have the police make an investigation and make a determination. But in theory, it could happen. More likely than not that it would happen that way, that it would be someone close to you that would be of concern, whether that's positive and they're trying to help you or there's some nefarious reason that they were doing it. But the anonymous aspect of it would be probably pretty slim, except in those cases where law enforcement is asked to look into things.
Right. And again, we just want to reiterate, all of us are in favor of helping people with mental health and not having, you know, firearms in those hands.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But taking it like this, where you're just, man, taking away all due process and everything, and then all the burden is on the person.
To get it back.
To get it back.
Right. And that's the trouble that I've had from the beginning. And that's where, you know, we had Brockler on air last year talking about this, and he's even come out, this is too far, he says. And I agree with him. I think that we can have a discussion about it and put some things in place that are more likely than not giving the opportunity for the person before their guns are taken to have a say in it. And I think that's a much better process than what they're suggesting here, which is we'll take them and then you're going to figure out a way to get them back. And because human nature, judges are just like everybody else. I mean, if it's a equal shot on both sides, they're more likely than not going to find for the confiscation than to allow the person to keep the weapons. Mm-hmm. And that just isn't
and
the
probably
right standard.
We've talked about this before the show too. If a law enforcement person goes to that judge is probably going to take what they say.
Yes.
And it's going to happen,
especially if that law enforcement officer appears in front of that court on a regular basis and the judge finds them to be credible the majority of the time. If that's the case, then it's a really hard battle to unwind that.
Yeah. Again, Kevin's number, 303-806-8886. Put that number in your phone. I tell you, I've had to call Kevin a couple times, just had questions about different things, or listeners call in with questions, and so he is there to help you. As we already mentioned, free consultation on any of the matters that Kevin's office deals with. So all you have to do is call him, 303-806-8886. It's the Legal Hour. If you've got any questions, give us a call.
Why are seniors considering a reverse mortgage other than no mortgage payments? Hi, Steve Hurley here with Affordable Interest Mortgage at 720-895-0500. Other than no mortgage payments, another reason may be the access to equity that they did not previously have. Taking in monthly payments for life or a specified period of time, or simply having a line of credit available. Take aim at 720-895-0500 and ask for me, Steve Hurley. NMLS number 243200, regulated by DORA, an equal opportunity lender.
You were just walking into that store when you were in a slip and fall accident as a result of the store owner's negligence. Flesh and Beck know what to do. First, make a report of the incident with the store owner. It's important to have an official document of all the important details. Second, make a note of all of your injuries so you can report them to your doctor as soon as you can. Third, take pictures of the conditions and location of the accident. And remember, it's your job to take care of yourself. Don't waste time arguing about who is at fault. Then, call Flesh and Beck.
Call me, Kevin Flesh, at Flesh Law to get a professional opinion. I will answer all your questions, and I will help you determine if you're entitled to compensation for your pain and suffering. If you've been injured in an accident, call me, Kevin Flesh, at 303-806-8886 for a free consultation to find out if we can help you get the compensation you deserve.
Hi, this is Scott Watley from my friends at Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center. Listen, I've trusted my pets to Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center for over 11 years, and you can too. At Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, they believe all pets deserve to have a good life. Whether your furry friend needs a checkup, advanced medical care surgery, boarding, grooming, obedience training, food, care products, or hey, just toys, Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center has you covered. Open 7 days a week for your convenience, and they're located at 8681 East Lincoln Avenue in Lone Tree. Learn more at LoneTreeVet.com or give them a call, 303-708-8050. That's 303-708-8050. Tell them Scott sent you.
Denver's Afternoon Rush. Rush to Reason is coming up at 3. Now, back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. It is the Legal Hour with our good friend Kevin Flesh. My name is Scott Watley. We appreciate you being with us. Be sure and check out our website, haystackhelp.com. There's a lot of great companies there to do business with. We have a help box right there on our homepage. If you've got questions or problems that you'd like us to try to answer and help you, all you have to do is send us a question through there. And then our helpline is always open, 303-333-HELP, 303-333-4357. You know, Kevin, in talking about this and thinking about, you know, man, I'm just thinking, man, I want an attorney that's, you know, for our rights and guns and different things.
Yeah.
So I got thinking about the topic of just picking the right attorney, no matter what we're dealing with, and really picking one that's in their wheelhouse. I mean, that's what they do day in and day out. And that's very important.
It is. And that's why we offer the free consultation, because sometimes I meet with a client and I can tell and they can tell in the initial meeting that we're just not a good fit. And that's okay. I mean, I want to find that out sooner than later. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some individuals out there that, for example, they want just a jerk of an attorney. They want somebody that's just mean to every person that they run into because they think that's effective. Well, I'm not that guy. So we have that conversation, and if that's what they want, I'm going to be upfront with them about it. But I agree. I mean, if I get somebody in, you know, and I have this from time to time as a criminal defense lawyer. You normally don't. You think of us as, generally speaking, pretty liberal and pretty independent minded. That isn't necessarily the way that I am, in the sense of I'm very much sort of a libertarian in what I believe about just an individual's rights and the system in general, especially in the criminal defense arena, which most people are when they're being accused of a crime. They want to make sure that the system is fair.
Sure.
And that it follows with what it's supposed to do, and they're presumed innocent and all of the things that we talk about. But at the same time, I get individuals who we have a discussion, I don't know, you know, just a topic about, sometimes I'll have individuals who will come in that they just won't take responsibility for what's taken part in their case, whether it's a civil case or a criminal case. And we have a discussion about that. And if in the initial meeting they're wanting me to do things that I just don't think I could even say to myself in a mirror, you know, I have to tell them that, because I think that's part of what good ethical lawyering is about, is as long as I feel comfortable in what the client wants me to do, and I think that my advocacy of them isn't impeded by my own personal beliefs, then we're fine. But if it's a different aspect of what they want to be done, and I don't think that I can do it in my heart, and also legally, I'm going to tell them that. And that's why picking the right lawyer is correct, because the individual who wants, you know, whatever they want, you need to find that out by meeting the person and spending some time together. And the legal environment in Denver in particular is so competitive that you'll find that lawyer that works for you. And that's why it's important for people to call us and have conversations and make decisions over the phone. But I always am very surprised that people are willing to just decide on hiring somebody either via email or what you've heard on the radio or what you've seen on TV or a billboard or anything else, because I think it's really of benefit to sit down in a room face to face, or Skype, or somehow have communication where you have regular human interaction, because jury trials are still, that's what they are. They're people in a room hearing things, and it's not just spitting data into a computer and having it spitting out an end, you know, answer to a question. It's people hearing evidence and considering it themselves and making decisions. And so that's why the consultation is important. And that's why you should interview several people. I'm never afraid for people to ask questions about my background or what we do or how we do things. And if you get a lawyer that is a little bit concerning about that, and they seem to be put off by asking those questions, you have to wonder if their self-confidence is compromised somehow.
Right.
Because in this environment, it's like anything else. It's, you know, picking a plumber or a car, you know, somebody to work on your car or anything else. You want to get good reviews, and you want to have a good relationship with them. And if you don't, there's plenty of other folks out there that you probably will be able to find it. And so that's why it is important. These shows are important, because you get a sense of, you know, our conversation. And
yeah, just the personality and what you're about.
Right,
yeah.
What we're about. But it's still an individual decision depending upon the case and depending upon how the person feels when they meet with us. And I think that's really important. And And we've been in the market a long time, and the reason that we've been in the market is because we have that belief that I'm not going to take on a case today that I think will affect my relationship with you, whether we continue to have a relationship after the case or not. I want to have that good reputation in the community from the get-go. And if I'm concerned about that, I'll tell you. I mean, I'm going to be honest about it, and I have the same sort of expectation from the client. If they're disappointed, because, I mean, that happens. And we figure it out just like anything else, and you get it resolved.
And I think one of the, you know, great things that, you know, we've enjoyed doing all the years of the show together and everything, and is people that, you know, whether listeners, friends, whatever, and even my own personal auto accident I had with you a couple years ago. I think people like coming and explaining something, and you sitting there calmly, you go, I got it.
Right.
You know what?
Yeah.
And I mean, that is, and I mean, honest to goodness, every person, and we've had a lot, has always called me after that and said, man, and in one way or another was saying this exact statement, he made me feel comfortable. He listened, okay?
Right.
And when I walked out there, I felt like the whole burden was off of me.
And that's a huge deal, too, because I know that. I mean, they call us attorneys and counselors at law for a reason, because there is that aspect of it. Number one, we're not as invested in what you're dealing with. You know what I mean? In the sense that we're professionally there for individuals and representing them. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to have the same sort of anxiety with a criminal case where you're worried about going to jail for a day or 10 years, as I'm just not going to. And I see you have one case. I've seen your case maybe 10 or 15 or 100 different times over the course of my career. And so you get that benefit, and that calmness comes from, well, this is how it should go. We've got to take these steps. We know what the process is. And I'll let you know when you should be concerned is what I generally tell people.
If you start sweating, then I should start sweating.
And if I'm having issues, if I get up early, or if I start having late night premonitions about your case, that's the case that I'm working on to figure out what we can do to resolve it, because I don't like that feeling as much as my clients. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is that sort of anxiety, I never want to react to a situation. I found in my practice that if I'm anxious about something relating to your case, I want to get that anxiety alleviated so that we can make the best decisions we can. Because people that make decisions based upon fear generally don't make the best decisions. And so I always want to have that discussion with clients about risks and rewards. Certainly in the case of personal injury, we're going to trial. You know, you've got an offer. It's the old adage. What's your case worth? You know, well, it depends on what a jury is willing to give you. And so we have that discussion and how much risk you're willing to take to get the amount that you think is you're deserved based upon what is being offered. And that's a really hard discussion to have with most people, because they always, I mean, it's your own case and you've lived it. So you always think it's going to be worth more than a disinterested person or a disinterested six people are going to think it's worth.
Right.
And that's hard.
Sure.
That's hard work.
And so then, you know, once you've done that and, man, you made that good decision, you got the right attorney, the next advice I would give you is follow their advice and do what they tell you to do, because it's probably nothing more frustrating on your end to sit down and have this great interview, both of you. Yes, they're with you. You tell them things to do, maybe sometimes more importantly, things not to do, and then they don't listen.
Yeah, I'll give you a great example. I've got a case right now where I've had it since the inception of the car accident. Guy came in a week after the car accident. It was 2016. Probably January, February of 2016, so over 3 years ago now. And he has real injuries. He goes and gets some physical therapy, and he gets some chiropractic treatment. But he's really busy. He's got his own, he's self-employed, he's got his own business. He has a real problem with his shoulder. And I keep talking with him about, because I keep seeing the medical records, of the fact that he needs to get to an orthopedic to have this shoulder looked at. And he needs to figure out what exactly is going on with the shoulder so that he can make a substantial claim, because this is a big deal. He probably needs surgery because he's had reasonable care right at the outset. And I keep telling him, listen, I give him suggestions as to where to go. He doesn't have insurance the way he should, but I'm able to find an orthopedic that's willing to do it on a lien. We do that within 6 months to a year after the accident. And lo and behold, we're 3 years out now. He still hasn't had that surgery. And and I've now got an estimate for what that surgery is going to cost. But he's just really affected his case because he hasn't followed through with what his doctors have told him. Mm-hmm. He hasn't followed through with what his lawyer has told him. And now we're speculating about what the value of his case is, because now the defense gets to say, well, maybe that shoulder's not related to the car accident. Maybe it's related to something else. And they have to go through and do an independent medical examination. And half the time, the independent medical examiners side with the defense because that's who's paying their bill. And it's, so it's those sorts of things that from the beginning you get good advice, but you don't follow it. And so that makes it really hard. And then, you know, it could be at the end of the day he's disappointed in the outcome of the case because he thinks he's entitled to what a normal person would have gotten for a shoulder surgery, but he hasn't had it yet.
Right.
And so those are the sorts of things that we deal with on a pretty regular basis. And it's disheartening because you really want to make sure that the client understands how important it is, because everybody wants to know what their case is worth, but it all depends on what they do relating to their injuries and how quickly they get better and if they have more or less significant injuries than they think when they first meet with me. And so it's that relationships that started from the beginning is what we really try to work on to help people and to help themselves.
Once again, it's a free consultation. Give them a call, 303-806-8886. It's the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesch. We'll be right back.
Ladies, I know you're tired of walking into the local gun store and seeing the same old thing. So let me tell you about Rampart Firearms. Just a quarter mile up Highway 67 off of Santa Fe and Sedalia, you will find a great selection of guns, ammo, tactical, and personal defense weapons. And if you or your spouse love to hunt, Rampart Firearms is a great stop for all of your hunting needs. Shotguns, rifles, pistols, anything from predator hunting to your next big game trip. Head to Rampart Firearms at the foot of the Rockies. Open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. And you will only pay a 4% tax on your purchase. RampartFirearms.com, 720-468-0050. That's 720-468-0050.
Got a road trip planned for getting ready for your next outdoor adventure? Hi, this is Scott Watley for my friends at D&D Tire Service. At D&D Tire Service in Parker and Aurora, they understand automotive issues can be a headache, and they never come at a convenient time. D&D Tire Service is family-owned and operated and is truly your one-stop shop for all of your automotive needs. All tires are reduced, and for a limited time, there are some great rebates saving you up to $200. From belts to tires, wiper blades, oil changes, D&D Tire Service has you covered. For the location nearest you, call 303-699-7337. That's 303-699-7337. D&D Tire Service is the official auto repair shop of Sportsman of Colorado Radio. Let D&D Tire Service keep you and your family safe on the roads. DndTireservice.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Trisna, owner of M4 Roofing and Gutters. Since 2004, it's been our mission to provide the highest quality of service and trust to every customer we serve. M4 Roofing and Gutters is a family-owned and operated company right here in Englewood, Colorado. At M4 Roofing and Gutters, quality customer service is our top priority. For a free inspection and estimate for your roofing project, call today 303-797-8600. That's 303-797-8600. Or visit us online at m4roofing.com. M4 Roofing and Gutters is an A-plus member of the Better Business Bureau and HaystackHelp.com.
Hi, this is Scott Watley. Let me tell you what I love about Stack Optical. They are truly one of the last optician-owned, family-owned optical stores. At Stack Optical, you can be confident you'll receive personal attention. For over 50 years, Alan Stack has shown he really cares about making his customers happy. Stack Optical also has a beautiful new location at 2233 South Monaco Parkway in Denver. Free and easy up-close parking. Stack Optical has an on-site eyeglass production lab. Whether you need office eyewear or a new set of shooting or golf glasses, Stack Optical has the solution with the Stack Sport Pack. Give them a call today and ask for their $69 eye exam, 303-321-1578. That's 303-321-1578. Your eyes and vision are one of the most important things in life. I'm confident at Stack Optical, you'll see the difference. That's 303-321-1578, stackoptical.com.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back. It's the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesh. A few more minutes with Kevin. Once again, his number, 303-806-8886, Flesh and Beck Law, and it's fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com. So, Kevin, a few minutes. We'll wrap up on the personal injury side of things. And one thing, too, that we're talking about picking that right attorney and doing what they do because, and we've talked about this before, but you guys establish a reputation to every courthouse you walk in, with every DA you talk in, so they know, hey, this guy in insurance companies, the whole picture.
Yep.
And they go, okay, we better settle this for what he's asking for right now because he is not shy about going to court. And there's a lot of, and I'm saying this, you're not, there's a lot of attorneys out there that really are not in for the big court case.
Right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, in fact, I just finished a case that we took over for another firm because the firm told them from the outset, we're not going to go to trial on this case. We're going to get as much as we can, and then you either accept it or you go get a different lawyer. And that's what we ended up taking the case over and filing suit on their behalf and moving it forward. And we got a substantial amount more. We got another $120,000 or $150,000 more. I can't remember, but it was in that range than what was offered. And so that you do get that. The other thing that's important is relating to sort of how you handle the cases in the sense of what evidence you provide. There's lots of lawyers out there that are playing games right now relating to prior medical and sort of hiding the ball relating to that. And defense lawyers and insurance companies know those firms as well, that they can't necessarily trust what they give them in the way of evidence. And that's not what our reputation is, because I'd rather have a fair fight where everybody has the same information and it's all the information that we have, because I want that same information from the defense lawyer. And that's sort of how our system is set up, especially on the civil side, is that everybody has the disclosures they need to have, and that the Supreme Court expects us to provide all of that information to each other, because then you can make your full argument. I mean, it's like we were talking at the beginning of the show with regard to sort of what the Democrats are doing with regard to legislation. Well, they're not really wanting that full fight. Right. They're wanting their agenda to be pursued and nothing else. And that's not how we practice. And so, yes, yeah, so we try to come up with, when we make demands, we try to come up with reasonable numbers with relating to the demand stage and see if we can get the case resolved prior to filing suit. But if we can't, then we can't. And then we're willing to file suit and move forward with it. And that helps us in two ways. One, it gives us a reputation of the fact that we just aren't going to settle for whatever they offer. And secondarily, we also end up running into the same lawyers that are defending the insurance companies. And so we get a relationship with them. And sometimes that relationship means that we're able to get cases settled sooner because we get all the information out there. They trust us in knowing that that's what we're going to do. And then we have a real discussion about value. And I think that's ending up now with us really figuring out which cases we have to try, and then the ones that we don't have to try, we can get settled sooner. Sure. Because they'll put more money on the table because they know they're going to have to put it whether it's beginning or the end.
Right.
And especially if they're in-house lawyers, which a lot of the insurance companies have their own lawyers now. They show up as a firm, but they're really the insurance company's lawyers. They don't get paid anymore if they settle a case today or after litigating it for 8 months. So they want to get those files off their desks. So I'm happy to do that and happy to work through that with them. And if we can't come up, I mean, I have no interest in any insurance companies. I mean, if we can't, then I'm always looking out for the client and moving forward and getting the best offers we can before trial. And if not, we have a jury decide.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, we always talk about you adding value. And I think this is very important because I think sometimes a lot of people do try to handle things on their own and they don't really understand that there's someone out there that says, hey, I'll meet with you for no charge, all right, just to put a second set of eyes on this to let you evaluate and give them some free expert advice to see where they are.
Absolutely. And about half the time, I think we can do something to add the value, that we can increase the amount of what's been offered. And if we can, then we talk about what we get paid for that amount above what they've already have on the table. Mm-hmm. And that's the value that I'm talking about. We always discuss sort of the value in general about it. The person has to bring us the information that we need. We need all the medical records. We need all of their other economic and non-economic damages. to have a discussion about what a jury may find. But if we can get that information and then we look at what the insurance company is offering, and, you know, if it's, and everybody's a little different relating to what substantially increasing value is. Some people, if they can get another couple thousand dollars in their pocket, it's worth it for them.
Sure.
And some people, it's like, oh, if it's not more than 10,000, then it's not worth it. Then we have that discussion about where they're at and what it means to file a lawsuit and go through that process and what they have to do. And if after that discussion, we all agree that it seems to make sense to go forward, then we do.
Mm-hmm. How many people, about a minute and a half here, but how many people are shocked when you get their insurance from them, you go through what coverages they have, and they really had no idea, or most of the time thought they had better coverage?
Happens to me every week. At least once a week, people have no idea what, they say they have full coverage and they don't understand what it is, and what limits they have relating to the full coverage.
Right.
Because every insurance company is different about what exactly that means. It means they may have MedPay, but they didn't actually get uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage. And when the insurance adjuster meant full coverage, they meant for liability. So they have bodily injury, they have property damage, they have collision, and they may have some MedPay, but they didn't get underinsured, uninsured motorist. Or they have underinsured, uninsured motorist, they don't have any MedPay, and they have the other coverages for bodily injury, but they have the minimum limits, which is $25,000. And
that goes quick.
It goes extremely quick. You get any sort of accident where you say to a police officer that you have a head injury and you lost consciousness, you're in an ER, you're in an ambulance, and you've got a CT scan and maybe an MRI, and that $25,000 is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Just that quickly. And so those are the sorts of things that everybody needs to make sure they have as much underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage as they can afford. Liability, you want to have as much as you consider what your assets are to protect your assets. But UM/UIM coverage is what covers you in case, sure, somebody hits you and doesn't have the insurance that you really need to protect yourself. So check your policies.
Absolutely. Kevin, always great information. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Once again, it's Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886, and it's fleshlawfirm.com. Thank you for joining us today. Check out our website, haystackhelp.com, and our helpline is there for you as well, 303-333-HELP, 303-333-4357. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Don't go anywhere. Leave it right here on KLZ 560.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.